todolisthome.com. Welcome. I'm your humble host, Tony Teolis, and I'm keeping track of things to do around the home. This is Episode 5 of the To-Do List Home Podcast, coming to you from Northern Virginia in the USA. More information on this podcast and others to follow can be found at todolisthome.com. The song of the day is One Last Breath by Creed, recorded on Weathered from 2001. Have a listen at amazon.com, and the link can be found in the show notes. We begin today with a special announcement. I was going through my seed bank last night, and I realized I have way more seeds than necessary for my planting this year and next year. I use only quality seeds from Southern Exposure Seed Exchange, located in Mineral, Virginia, and over the past 2 years I have gathered quite a collection, and it would be a shame to see them go to waste. For the 5th and 10th person who emails me their home or P.O. box mailing address, I will send you a free package of a nice collection of seeds that will be sure to brighten up any garden and feed you a little at the same time. So email me at TonyTeolis@todolisthome.com with only seeds in the subject line. That's Tony Teolis. T-E-O-L-I-S is the last name. Tony Teolis at todolisthome.com with only seeds in the subject line. What drives this? This is my way of paying back years of using the internet for research, learning, and improving permaculture techniques to help build community, sufficiency, and reliance. Retiring at age 55 or younger, and thesurvivalpodcast.com. Go to thesurvivalpodcast.com today and learn how to live the good life if times get bad, or even if they don't. Today's gardening chore: making a place in my yard for the beehive. I was going to put my beehive in the yard last year, but once I had it in place, I checked with neighbors, and the first one turned out to be highly allergic to bee stings. So I gave up on the project last year, and I'm glad I did, because the spot where I was going to put it was not one that would have been suitable. Last fall, my neighbor moved, and in January, the internet encouraged me to reconsider raising bees. So I placed an order with the Walter T. Kelly Company for a package of Russian honeybees. The cost for them with a queen was $86 plus shipping, and that will turn out to be about 10,000 bees. In order to find the perfect spot in the limited space of my backyard, I had to consider sunshine, shade, water accessibility, and protection. I found the spot as indicated by the pictures, but as you can see, a bit of work was required to make it suitable. For starters, I cut a 7-foot by 4-foot piece out of an old hot tub deck put in by a previous owner and placed it in the yard near a few of my gardens. This large deck will accommodate up to 3 hives in the future and leave me plenty of working space. Once I placed and leveled the deck, I built narrow beds for flowers and placed 7-foot netted screens around it to shield the hive from view and allow for easy access by the bees to lots of tall flowers. And I will also put in plants there such as zinnia, sunflowers, morning glory, marigold, and vegetables like climbing beans and possibly a tomato plant or two. Total construction time was about 2 Saturday afternoons. More on the bees and the beehive as we get closer to getting them in the mail. On my to-do list today is buying a home in Fairfax County, Part 2. First, a financial disclaimer. Neither this site nor its owner are in any way providing anything other than a personal story of a home buying experience. No responsibility is to be attached to the owner or the site for what you actually do with the information provided. If you have not yet listened to Part 1, I suggest you begin there. The show notes in Episode 4 also contain more resources related to our home buying experience. In the show notes, I have included a blank spreadsheet that show the things we took into consideration as we were managing our budget over the years. Feel free to review and customize it for your own budget tracking purposes. In the last episode, I told the first part of the story of our home buying search in Fairfax County, USA. That covered the period from my return to the USA in the fall of 2003 through November 2007. In short, during that period we searched for a home and even came close to getting one once, but ended up continuing as apartment dwellers. It was not until a year later, when I was sitting in the dentist chair in October of 2008, that my dentist impressed upon me the importance of having a home for my family. I told her briefly of our trials in trying to find a home, but she assured me that if we kept up the search, we would not be disappointed in the end. She further pointed out that there was an $8,000 federal tax credit for first-time home purchasers, and we better not miss the boat. That was not the first time I had heard of the tax credit, and it piqued my interest. I asked if she was so sure we needed a home, did she have a contact she could refer us to in order to pick up the search if we were interested. She gladly took a card of a friend of hers she had in a stack and gave me Gomathi's contact information. Gomathi was friendly enough on the phone, and she said she was a licensed real estate agent and did the work part-time. That should have been my first warning there. Never pick someone who's going to help you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars unless they live and breathe the work. As a part-timer, it's hard to do that, let alone stay on top of your game. Gomathi came to visit us and said, as we stated the usual, "We want a dream home that's large and sits on an acre of land and wasn't going to cost us a dollar more than $355,000. Once again, we received that darted look of her eyes and the urge she was suppressing to tell us that we must be from Mars. Instead, she kindly talked about the kind of home and neighborhood we should be interested in, as well as school ratings and other demographics. Within a few days, she was back to us with a list of homes, and for the first time in our 4.5-year search, we were presented with the option of looking at single-family detached homes. In other words, a home sitting by itself on a piece of land with neighbors no closer than 30 feet. Although the prices were well beyond $350,000, however, also for the first time we were shown lists of foreclosures, and my wife and I thought that that might present some negotiating room as far as price was concerned. My idea was that because my wife's schedule was more flexible than mine, that she and Gomathi should go out together and find that dream home. Leave it to the ladies, right? That's what I thought. Then, once they found the dream home, we would go through the purchasing process. Gomathi showed my wife about 4 houses one afternoon, one of which was a foreclosure. My wife really had no idea what to look for in a home, and was overly influenced by Gomathi's pushing of homes near certain schools that she claimed were great for our children. However, my wife was not too impressed at all by the homes that she was shown, and even less so by the foreclosure property. The next day, Gomathi called me at work and asked simply, "Which house do you want?" I told her that based on my wife's impression, she had seen nowhere near enough homes to form any kind of an opinion, and as such, no purchase decision could be made. She tried to assure me that the homes she showed my wife were all suitable for our living, and all I had to do was visit one of them. I told her that my wife needs to see at least 20 homes or so before I could get around to joining the search. Gomathi was taken aback by this statement and said, "Okay." She would take my wife out one more time. Well, that was enough poor service in itself to get me to reconsider the relationship. At the time, I was reading Turning the Future into Revenue by Glenn Hiemstra. My friend Debbie had been keenly interested in seeing my family move into a nice home as well, and when I related the Gomathi story to her, she was appalled by the lack of service. She said for us not to give up, and would put us in touch with someone better. Sure enough, she referred us to Ramez as a mortgage broker and Paula as the real estate agent. I did some extensive comparison shopping for a mortgage between Ramez and 2 other gentlemen, and in the end, Ramez's numbers and sense of honesty outshined the others. Ramez agreed to be on standby as we pursued our search, and we felt reassured that we could continue to look at detached homes. We soon met Paula, who sat with us as we once again went over what we wanted in a home and how much we were willing to pay. Paula did hear us, but interjected that we also needed to be realistic. We would have to follow her lead and she did not disappoint us as we began our home search with her. She worked for Ready Real Estate, and they had the best website for finding homes to visit via their easy-to-use and interactive map system. Before we knew it, we were at ground level of the housing debacle. The first day with Paula was a Sunday, and we went to look at 10 houses. 5 of the homes were in short sale status. That's when the current owner had a mortgage that they wanted to unload for less than what they took on as the purchase. In short, it's a several month process of waiting and possibly never getting a home. All the homes were more than 4 times my annual salary and asking price. So we thought we would at least be pleased, especially because the advertisements were so well written. The previous times we had tried to look at homes, we were limited to row houses and not very nice ones at that. This time, detached homes were falling into our range, and we were only going to pull the trigger for something with a little privacy. 4 of the homes we did see were fair, and I began to take notes on everything we saw in order to make some good guides and comparisons. The spreadsheet for this research is titled Homes We See 3 and is located in the show notes of this podcast. Interestingly, the homes we couldn't see or only checked a little bit gave a better impression of what the hell was going on. House number 6 was way too close to a busy street, so we didn't bother to get out of the car. House number 7 had such a bad mold smell that Paula ran out of the home quickly after entering it and said we were not going to look at it at all. I went in anyway and was limited to 60 seconds before the smell overcame me. House number 8 was in a nice, well-tended neighborhood. The picture and description of this house was very nice. They must have been prepared a long time ago. The house was beat up and nowhere near ready for showing. A little girl answered the door and let us in. Her dad was sleeping and her mom was in the shower. It was a mess everywhere, and the front door was broken. Apparently, they were renting, so Paula asked the little girl, "Where are you moving to?" To which the startled girl replied, "We're moving?" Paula promised not to ask children any more questions. House number 9 was a pretty place in a pretty neighborhood. We entered only to find a big mess. 6 adults and a baby. Just a mess, and it was really something my wife would be hard-pressed to find in Japan. This place was a short sale too, and it was a goddamn crime what had happened. I felt so bad for these people who are probably trying to rent as responsibly as they could, yet the owners of some of these short sales and foreclosures were real shits. Whatever happened to the renters? We were just beginning a long, hard winter. House number 10 had a rat that got electrocuted by a dryer still stuck to the wall, and the dryer was still plugged in. That was all we needed to see there. All I could think of was, "Dude, are you kidding me? $450,000 for this freaking dump?" As you can tell by the spreadsheet, the list of homes we saw with Paula was getting pretty extensive, and we could tell we were wearing her out. There was one home we actually visited a couple of times in a faraway neighborhood at the end of a long, winding, wooded road, but there was no basement and only a small backyard. But it kept dropping in price as the owner was anxious to move to Colorado. In the end, we couldn't make a decision on that home. By mid-December, we went looking for homes on our own and left Paula to work with less meticulous potential buyers. Just look at the spreadsheet and you'll understand what I mean by meticulous. Our list soon approached 100, and most of these seemed to be foreclosures or short sales. As the search continued, it also gave me great insight into calculating how I would get to work and back, among other factors. I refused to be influenced by price and carried on a search closer to where we were currently living and would allow for a relatively easy commute. I also needed a decent backyard, as I had hundreds of vegetable seeds that I was ready to start growing as soon as we moved into a home. Finally, on December 26, we found the home we wanted to live in. It was in a nice, quiet neighborhood with beautifully maintained homes, really close to an elementary school, middle school, high school, and even a college. It was a foreclosure property, and although we could only peek in from the outside, we liked what we saw. We contacted Paula and asked her to show us the property. She did so on New Year's Eve 2008, and because the home was a foreclosure, there was no electricity, and the water was shut off. Without getting a good view, the house seemed very run down to us and in need of great repair. But we liked what we saw compared to the many other properties we visited that season. It had potential, and the backyard was unbelievable. It bordered a 40-acre wooded park with a playground right beyond the back fence. There was even a gazebo and a deck where a former owner had placed a hot tub. But the hot tub was gone, just as the washer and dryer. There was a great deck that led off from the back of the home, and it had three bathrooms. After years of apartment living, having three bathrooms was greatly desired. This home was a split level, and that meant not so many steps between the two levels, which would be easy on us as we got older and very convenient for us now. We weren't sure about the home, and we asked to see another in the same neighborhood. It was the same year in design, but the inside was completely different as far as everything seemed to be from 1969. I left that home thinking, dude, are you kidding me? $475,000 for this freaking dump? We had decided that the home bordering the woods was what we needed, and it was actually tough sleeping that night because the asking price was beyond our means. The next day was a Sunday, and my wife and I sat on the bed together as we discussed what I would say to Paula. My wife, who lived through the Japanese housing and stock market crash back in the late 80s and early 90s, insisted that I offer not a penny more than $100,000 off the asking price. This was our starting price, to be exact, just like we started in 2004. I pleaded with my wife to be reasonable or we would look like fools, but she didn't want to hear any of it. So, I began to write down some reasons to explain to Paula why the home seemed to be in disrepair and what I thought it would cost to bring it up to a livable standard. Thus, we began with a low-ball offer. I then reluctantly made the call to Paula and told her we wanted to make an offer. She gleefully said, "Okay, how much?" And I remember mumbling, There was a moment of silence, and I began to think that the connection was lost. After this pause, Paula replied sternly, "I'll need a check for $10,000 tomorrow." I thought she would have hung up the phone, but she allowed me to say, "Okay." And my wife and I gave each other high fives. Paula came by the next day, took the check, and said she was going to see what she could do. There was some initial paperwork to read and sign, and we began to realize that we still had quite a ways to go. January 12th was my wife's birthday, and as I was closing out at work for the day and getting ready to take the family to dinner, Paula called me and told me that the initial offer was rejected. She said we needed to go up by $30,000, and so my family and I discussed this development over dinner. The next day, I told Paula okay, and the process continued until a week later, when Paula called to say we had to make a better and final offer. I asked her to at least show us the house again, and this time we took flashlights, a camera, and a video camera. Upon seeing the home in daylight, we received a new perspective. The place was gorgeous, and I never use that word except when I refer to my wife. Back home, the pictures thrilled us, and we realized we had to make a good final offer that we felt confident with. So on January 19th, we gave Paula a final offer and went to bed thinking this time the job was done and done well. The next morning was inauguration day, and a day off for me. The phone rang at 9 a.m., and it was Paula saying that there was another buyer for the home, and we had to up our final offer by another $20,000. I truly believed this was a bluff. The economy was sucking and getting worse by the day, and the bank that owned the property was in California. Their real estate agent was just a local internet-only real estate company run by one person, and I just knew he was trying to put the squeeze on us. I confidently told Paula that the other buyer could have the house, and we actually wanted to see another home in the same neighborhood if we couldn't get the one we made an offer on. I called my friend Debbie to tell her what happened, and she agreed that it was a bluff and to hold our ground. 15 minutes later, Paula called again and said that the other buyer needed help with closing costs and we could seal the deal for just another $7,000. I was beginning to cave in and almost said okay when my wife wanted to know what was going on. When I told her, she got so upset she almost took the phone to hang up on Paula. My wife is a really sweet person and never gets angry, so I knew I'd better be careful. I told Paula I'd get back to her and called Debbie again. As always, Debbie was firm in her commitment to our friendship and said she really wanted to see us in a nice home, but maybe we should give up on this one if we weren't going to stick to our final offer. My wife, who became even more upset, stated we didn't even need a home, and if it was going to be like this, then the hell with it. It was a foreclosure, and there were just too many unknowns as it was. So I called Paula back at 9:30 and told her our offer wasn't going to change. She said we were giving up on our dream home, and I said we'd live with our decision. The rest of the day just sucked ass. In the pre-dawn hours of the next day, my children and I had to accompany my wife to a distant medical center for a previously scheduled procedure, and she was pretty much out of it when we left the facility and were driving down the road when Paula called on my cell phone. She said, "Tony, is your family with you?" I said yes, and she excitedly said, "I can't believe it, but the bank accepted your offer." And I calmly said, "I knew they would." We conducted an inspection, and I even paid for some minor plumbing repair as a result of the inspection. We approached closing day on February 13th with all the tapestry of buying a home for the first time. We were in our 40s and glad we had stuck it out. By February 27th, we had cleaned the place ourselves and moved in. As far as being a foreclosed property, it wasn't one that displaced a family. The most recent owner had overleveraged himself on more than one property in the area and abandoned this home. We put more than 20% down because of all those years of renting paid off with traditional savings accounts. Our interest rate was 4.375%, and it was the lowest the escrow officer at closing had ever seen in his 30 years of being in the business. We also got 1% of the purchase price back from Paula and $8,000 back from the federal government. At the time, I was reading Physics of the Impossible by Michio Kaku. Later on, after we had been living here a few months, another couple we met told us that they were the ones who were trying to get our home. A year and a half after that, we got new neighbors who moved in, and they told us the same thing. So maybe we almost did blow it, but something must have been in our favor. The home keeps me busy, hence the need for this website, but we're trying to do it economically and as self-sufficient and reliant as possible. The lesson to you is, don't give up on anything you try. If the things we try in life were always easy, then we'd have mediocre lives. That's it for today. Now go out and do something useful.